Well, Scott is getting, just to let you know, there is a black water dispenser that's in the corner here. I had to find it before things started. So if you are getting thirsty, there's little plastic things and you can fill yourself up back there.
You pull up the slides, or that's
Yeah, if
not me.
anyone missed it, bathrooms are on the corner to this way, basically, to the right when you exit.
Am I supposed to do something? Wasn't told. So I'm just going to start by saying how thrilled we are to be here. It was barely about a week ago that we had no idea what was going to happen. So, oh, thank you. And
Thank you.
great. And I'll also just kind of mention that I think I had 15 minutes. I probably need more. So I apologize for being a federal employee and making things a little slower, but we'll try and keep things on time as much as we can.
Nothing more important, I think.
Yeah. So what I wanted to start with is, we've also had transitions, and I wanted to give everybody here, not just for the newer groups that are joining, but for everybody as a kind of reminder, who the team is that I work with very closely at NINDS, and kind of give you a little bit of flavor of their roles. And so I do have a few folks here that were able to come with me today. So Clinton Wright, who's off at the front table here, he's the director of our division and intricately involved with me and all the things that StrokeNet has become. And another important new face in this place is somebody, unfortunately, who wasn't able to come with us. Passport expired, and the government couldn't work fast enough to get her here in time. But this is Laura Kimberly. You had previously worked with Joanna Vivalda for the last 10 years. Joanna has been phasing into a different role, and Laura Kimberly has joined. She is officially the program official of the network and of many of the trials. And so I'm going to talk about this in a second, but I wanted you to make sure you knew that face, and hopefully you'll get to meet her in person. A couple other faces that I think are relevant to point out. I'll just kind of circle my way from the right back down. But Dr. Benson, Richard Benson, he's a colleague of ours in the Division of Clinical Research, and he leads the Office of Global Health and Health Disparities. And he's playing sort of an integral role in helping us with that health disparity aspect in the network. So you'll see his face sort of floating around. Adam Hartman is a pediatric neurologist who is also the project scientist for FOCUS, but really sort of helping us kind of backbone our efforts with pediatrics. Albert Racinos is a program specialist who does a lot of behind the work scenes. She's mainly been also helping us with bringing on the foreign sites. As you know, there's a very complicated process that we have to go through in getting clearance and approval to bring in our foreign colleagues. In the lower right-hand corner, for anybody who doesn't or hasn't heard about SPAN yet, and hopefully that meant that you weren't on the calls, and we've talked about this in the past, but Francesco Bosetti and Jim Koenig are very close colleagues of ours. They're the ones who are charged and who've been leading this tremendously exciting translational program. But I add them as part of the team because, in the spirit that we've always tried to encumber all of the science, they're really our backbone for the basic science when we even think about what we're trying to do, going forward. The DSMB, so Carlos Ferracco, who's with us, he really kind of spearheaded and put the whole DSMB aspect together. We now have Lena Garcia, who's co-chairing the role. Carlos is going to be transitioning some of those roles as we bring in, a new person so that we can actually move him up into some other roles in the network. But, I put a TBD because with STEP coming online, we're going to have a third DSMB because there's no way that we can fit that program into either two in the middle. And then the last that I just wanted to highlight is Miriam Azal, if I pronounce her name correctly, and Catherine Levy, who both have a lot of tremendous background in project coordination. Marion actually just joined us from the intramural part of NINDS, and she's come on to our staff. And both are going to be playing a very integral role in our coordinator training, which we're very, very excited about that Pooja was talking about. So again, just wanted to put some faces, because what is relevant and important, I just kind of wanted to remind folks in the terms of the way we work, You know, NIH is a sort of very complex environment, but this is a cooperative program, you know, by means that we obviously cooperate with our roles internally, and we try to translate that cooperation on the, you know, on the sort of external side that, you know, when we work with you guys. And so that what that means is that we do have some divisional roles. So I identify this because the program official is that is the role that I was talking about with Laura. She does manage with the grants and stuff. Technically, she's the one who's approving programmatically budgets and stuff. That's not my role. I know you guys love to talk to me and try and get me involved in sort of things, and I do try and pass her off. But I really wanted to kind of highlight this going forward because there are very, you know, specific roles. I have no legal authority, and actually, you know, short of being an advocate for you guys, I do have to draw some divisional boundaries. I actually get removed from council when they discuss some of these concepts because I can be considered very much a partner working with you guys. And just as much as we can't put you in front of council to advocate for your grants, I can't do the same thing either. So I just wanted to make sure you sort of understood what those different roles were, you know, and I mentioned with, you know, Adam Hartman, because, you know, he works on focus in the same sort of way, but, you know, of course we work as a team and we'll try and also always help you kind of get to that place that you need to go to. So let me kind of, what I really wanted to do is I wanted to sort of think about the big picture. And it was my kind of coined phrase of calling this StrokeNet 3.0. I will say that NINDS, we think of things in decades, you know, and even though you would probably immediately think, okay, this is our third renewal cycle, so that's the 3.0. I actually think back a little bit further because for me, the Spotrius program that many of you were involved with that we ran for 10 years leading to the first 10 years of the Stroke Network, and now where we're going to go in the next 10 years is how I think of 3.0. And I think we've made, you know, very significant jumps and accomplishments as we moved from each one of those things. But I can tell you that even, you know, midway through the Spotrius program, we were talking about all these concepts of network and collaboration and how to build these teams and how to move the science forward. And so I think we're sitting kind of on this verge of how we can pull what we've learned together as a group in the last 10 years. I put this slide together because I wanted to try and get a framework of how much stuff is being done. And this to me was a sort of a visual graphic. It doesn't show when things are stopping or finishing. It just is kind of like when we brought them in and to highlight, I love all the acronyms and the names. So that's kind of why I put them on the page. And I wanted to sort of identify that there are a lot of different types of things that are coming in. You'll notice right off the bat in 21, right in the middle of the pandemic, it looks like we exploded with a lot of stuff. Obviously there was the COVID trials that we were brought into, but also to highlight the long-term follow-up studies that we added to CREST 2 and to iAcquire, as well as adding some MRI studies like we did to Saturn and to Captiva, as well as our biomarker study with Verify and obviously the trials and so forth. We're making great progress in transition. CREST, as you know, has finished the endarterectomy arm. They've fully enrolled. They have about 100 subjects left to enroll in the stenting arm. So we're now within probably 2 years of finishing that trial. And CREST H, I think, has about 25 patients, if I got my numbers right, you know, to finish that study off. So exciting that we've seen the transition of what we even did and started in the first 5 years. And of course, we had the trials that recently completed and some that are on the verge. I think Transport's got 16 more subjects to finish. You know, I told Wayne I want it done by the end of the year, but we'll be hopefully pretty close. And we have some big milestone markers with SleepSmart having a major interim analysis next year. Fastest is coming up very, very quickly as they rapidly enroll subjects. And iAcquire, I think now is about 75% complete. That will be an exciting, our first pediatric study to finish off. And they're rolling right on target. So all very exciting. Of course, we have our wing of new things that are starting up too. And, you know, we're pushing closer and we'll talk probably a little bit more about those going forward as well. So the main thing I did want to focus on, and I apologize that I think I've already run into my time limit, but I wanted to talk about the renewal, but I wanted to talk about the renewal and frame it in such a way as terms of what we can take away as a group and learn and to move forward with it. Because I thought there were some good, you know, messages that came in looking at it. I'm going to focus all my discussion on the regional coordinating centers. I just kind of reminded you that, you know, we have to do this every 5 years, that we recompete, keeps the, you know, the energy flowing, gives everybody opportunities, allows us to restructure and things a little bit. And so that just kind of shows that framework, right? So when we started out, and I'm not trying to go through this in extreme detail, but, you know, the reviewers, they had to kind of approach this in a very unique way. I will tell you right now that reviewing these kind of grants is painfully difficult because it's 20, 30 of the same, you know, and especially when you're doing really well, which is some of the things I wanted to highlight. Okay. So there were a number of things that they did have to kind of focus on. And these are the sort of things they considered. You know, they considered whether the application really had a strong understanding of the network vision and the way they sort of communicated their plans. Obviously, it goes without saying with the expertise and the ability to implement stroke trials, because that's what we're all about. But, you know, the plans for improving collaborations, right? We have established collaborations, but how do we get better training, recruitment, promoting diversity was a big sort of underlying part of the conversation. Knowing that we're established, you know, do we have the folks like the program managers in place? And even with the new sites coming on, do they have an idea where they're going to go with that? You know, the concept that we have this sandbox of specialties and StrokeNet, and is that apparent in each one of the applications? And that was, again, very, very important. And then another thing I'm going to come back to is leadership transition. We've talked about, you know, how we bring the transition of fellows into research. We're going to focus on how we evolve that transition of program managers. And the review was very astute on how are we training the leadership to take over. And you've heard this transition already at the coordinating center. And I think that was something that came out. It's not just simply, do I have a colleague that can take over? It's how do we make this better going forward? And that was something I really wanted to kind of focus on going. And then obviously the training and such. And they didn't spend, you know, they were told to pay attention to the aspects of the budget and the administration aspect, you know, the administrative aspects of the RCC, you know, and then support for the managers, how they might expand upon that. Obviously, we have 50,000 that has been cut out for the fellows. So all the components in there. I did want to mention that we asked them very specifically to look for the commitment to using the clinical trial agreements, right? You know, we used to call them master trial agreements. I think that language was in the RFA, but, you know, that concept is the centers, and not you guys here, but your institutions. They were looking to see whether or not that came across, whether that there were agreements in how we would operate as a group. And also really, really kind of key in this was this concept of the single IRB and the central IRB. Right. And, you know, we've done a lot of hand waving and we've had a lot of complexities, but we really tried to reach in because we wanted to know that within your institutions, there were people that were supporting your efforts, because that's what's important to us in trying to think about how do we make you guys better? Because we know that you fight in a sea of your own bureaucracy and we want to make sure that we can help that out. So we really paid attention to that. And I was very pleased. This just, you know, kind of a little bit of a numbers game, but just terms of numbers of applications, roughly about the same from our last renewal. What I saw is a good benchmark is that our scores improved. Okay. They got better, you know, lower is higher, if you will. Right. And I put asterisks because in 2018, they did remove a couple of projects by not scoring them, you know, so in this round, everybody was included in the score base so that it could, you know, actually, you know, shift the numbers a little bit more. Impressively, you know, we had 25 applications that scored under 40, you know, considering very, very, very good applications. I mean, there were that aspect, and you know, just from our project reviews, how difficult it is to get scores that are low, but that number increasing, and we had seven that even improved in that impressive range of in the teens. I think we had two of the centers, and I'm not calling anybody out in specific, you're free to you know, share information amongst yourself, but we had two near perfect scores. I think they ended at 11s. So again, very impressive in that terms of aspect. But more importantly, all that translated to our ability to bring in 27 centers. And, you know, as Pooja already alluded to, this allowed us to renew all of the previously funded RCCs and add three more to the mix. And so this is the kind of geographic map. And I wanted to highlight this because it, you know, it just shows how we're balanced. We're nearly balanced across, you know, sort of geographic region. This is what we use for our sort of council depiction when we have representation from, you know, sort of the four corners of the United States. Obviously, there was a little bit more in the southern states on the way that kind of broke off. But I think this is a more important figure to show, because I think as a network, one of the things we're sort of moving away from, you know, the regional coordinating centers have sort of got a little extra money and more of a regional responsibility in kind of managing these, you know, these local networks, right? But we are a network of a lot of sites. And so we're trying to represent ourselves by the contribution of, you know, all of these components. And what I found to be quite striking is how well we actually overlay with the population density in the United States. You know, when you look at our map, it kind of looks like we've got some big vacant holes, but a lot of that is represented by where the people are, you know, and how we get to. And it's not represented how well and, you know, how hard sites like University of Washington have to reach out and pull into those regions. We've brought in Hawaii, and I know we're working on Alaska. We're getting, you know, further out into that map. You know, as far as, you know, race and ethnic, you know, I think representation, you know, I think we are able to touch into that as well. And obviously a lot of discussions is, you know, how do we translate that to the local efforts and make sure we have representative populations? So I think we're doing the right things and we have, you know, that sort of broader representation, but I just wanted to kind of keep that picture in your head because that's what we're moving forward. All right, I'm going to make a few comments about what came out in the review. You know, that, again, not singling any center out. These are just general thematic things that were taken away by my colleagues when they listened to the review. Metrics, always a big component of these reviews. I mean, it's probably what we consider the benchmark. You know, am I a good enrolling site or not? I would say that overall, the metrics were very positive. Obviously, as Pooja mentioned, you know, we've enrolled a lot of subjects, although our cardiology colleagues and the ones that were in the review kind of laughed a little bit, said only 12,000 enrolled. That doesn't seem like a lot, but you know, certainly for stroke, that is a lot. And they think that was reflected, you know, as far as though, we have some things that we have to think about and work on. I think the sort of normal overstatement kind of came in. One of the tricky part was when we had one application say, I'm the third best enrolling site, you know, in SleepSmart. And the next one comes in and says, I'm the third best enrolling site in SleepSmart. And no sort of like credible way of how to, you know, do this, because unfortunately, as hard as we've tried, we can't give the review any sort of normalized data. You know, I can't even tell them that there's a website that's there, and I tried to do that. So, you know, it all has to come from the applications. This is the mind-blowing part of this whole process, because obviously then, you know, it's the fairness part, but it's the tricky part. So it's some of the things that I think we have to kind of think about and how to do that. You know, the emphasis on non-stroke net trial enrollment kind of came up a lot, and, you know, some confusion in some aspects. You know, sites are very, very busy, and how that kind of contributes and what the balance is. Obviously, sites that were not as being looked at as a renewal straight up, right? They had to show that they had the bandwidth and capacity to do it. So a little bit of confusion there. Startup is always and has been probably a difficult, you know, aspect, because we always give these ranges. And unfortunately, review always focuses on the longest time, you know, and so it was some pause for me to think about a little bit and how we think about that. I think as a group, we have to do better sort of explaining ourselves. Okay, we have to talk about some of these outliers, because many of them are beyond your control in some cases, right? But then they come back to hurt, you know, when you're putting it on paper and you're saying, oh, you know, it took us 600 days to get this study up and going or something of that effect, right? So I think that's some of the things we didn't think about enough. I was hoping that review would sort of think about how are we doing on the expected average monthly you know, for our sites, not just, you know, in total. We have some sites that over enroll. Sometimes it's the balance. You do, you're a little slow for a while and then you over and it balances out. You know, I think that, you know, our objective always really should be, are we delivering what we said we should be delivering? And that's a big focus. And then this concept between enrolled and randomized was just a real struggle, you know, and we'll have to again think about this. But I will say that, you know, and I hope this goes without saying, as you know, as the regional coordination, there was a lot of focus on the network, you know, the network sites and the contribution, not just the, you know, the mothership, but, you know, all of the, you know, all the players that are a part of this. Again, that global map of all the sites. And in some cases, that's what, you know, differentiated some of the scoring. Training was very, very well received. You guys should feel very, very positive about that. I can't overemphasize this and why I'm excited about, you know, what we can, you know, potentially translate this into and really elevating our program managers. I will say that, you know, when you do good, of course, those that do better are going to get higher marks. So some of the accolades went to those sites that really have produced fellows that have gone out and gotten grants or, you know, faculty positions. And so I think it just gives us that aspect to aspire to, but I didn't want you to walk away and think that there was any criticism in that at all. Communication probably underscored was probably one of the major things that I think the review focused on, right? Because like I said, metrics wasn't the whole game. Training wasn't the whole game. These kind of things. It's like, what are you guys doing to manage, you know, the systems that you have and how you're communicating? How are you working with these sites to solve their problems? Because they don't have the resources, or they may not have all the experience that, you know, we've invested in the regional centers. They were really looking and in some cases really applauding some of the effort, you know, or picking on some of the others and areas that they thought, you know, could be explained a little bit better. But that was kind of like this spirit of what the program was. But I just wanted to kind of emphasize that, because I think this is definitely something that, you know, we can continue to improve. It just reaches into so many aspects of what we do. But, you know, just sort of think about not dwelling on the problem, but focusing on the solution, right? How we translate that and just always move forward, I think, is what they were looking at. And then I wanted to come back to this concept of this transition plan, because there were a number of sites that it was just very, very evident in where the transition was planted. Started 10 years ago, right? Pulling cases up in cases where we have, you know, even fellows that have now elevated into leadership roles or even taking over RCCs. And obviously, if I go back to my 3.0, a lot of the leadership that we had that came from Spotrius is now representing in this room, right? That's the concept of the transition. You know, we can't just, you know, do the parts, we have to think about the top. And I learned that even through the review, because I think that aspect of how we're training leaders to be leaders is even more important than training somebody to be in research. And so I wanted to make that kind of a focus. And I wanted to sort of emphasize that, because, you know, there were many different cases in which, you know, it was, well, my colleague can take over for me, true succession plan. And we tested this plan. You know, we had the unfortunate passing of Alex Dromrick, and our MedStar team, you know, very, very seamlessly were able to maintain and function at that site. You know, we have the natural transition because you guys, you know, move from institution to institutions, and that we sort of expect, right? But, you know, some of these unexpected things we have to deal with, but having that transition of leadership obviously makes things stronger. And we have to look at these things that we have now and try and position it how we are going to be, you know, 30, 50% better in 5 years, so that a lot of this is not a conversation. The last comment about commitment to the central IRB, I mentioned that already, but we really had the review look at that. And, you know, I think we're going to put a push, and not to push you guys, there probably will be very few milestones and things that are in the grant, but this is probably one of them that you will see. We want to make sure that your institutions are supporting you with this, because it has gotten to be very complex with local and central sort of review. And we want to try and maintain the spirit, because it slows us down, right? And we all know that we don't want to be slowed down. I mentioned that a last comment about EFICT, you know, which was very intriguing. Even some of our European colleagues that were on the review just baffled in some of the complexities that we create in EFICT here, but there is a lot of movement. There's some activities in our partnership with Siren that we're trying to focus on this. So I just wanted to keep this on the radar screen because it's clearly something that's going to take over in the future. Okay, just to kind of circle back, you know, and Pooja already went through this. I'm not going to go through back in a lot of detail, but two sort of, I think, big picture things that we're focusing on. This concept of the planning that, you know, that we've built in, right? And I want to give everybody this sort of the full context of why this came out, okay? When we went through our evaluation with council and we had Neuronext that was with us in this 10-year evaluation, there were recommendations that came out that from the council that said, hey, NINDS, you should just put out RFAs and tell the community what trials we should do. And that will just streamline the whole process. And we did not quite like that idea. We've never sort of lived on the spirit. We don't feel like the NIH should be dictating what science we should do. That science should be reflective in the collaboration from the community. So that sort of was our response. This is, look, we're uniquely poised to work with the community and have these kind of conferences. For those of you that participated in Princeton conferences in the past, it will have a little bit of that kind of flair to it because we're going to bring the community. These will be, you know, conference-led grants that are going to, the funding is not in the network to do all of this. We're going to have to bring in some additional funding. But it is a real opportunity, not just to look for, you know, what parts of stroke don't have a treatment or, you know, that kind of thing, but really to focus on what's some of the emerging science. You know, how do we move forward? You know, we've talked so much about the STEP platform now that hopefully that's ingrained in the back of your head, but a concept and some opportunities largely pushed by Clinton and how we're you know, using other transaction authority to, you know, to creatively address a big problem and maybe do something a little bit differently. But this idea of how we can generate where that, you know, where those opportunities lie and then build some consensus with the community and then have those published as white papers that would give the network the kind of, you know, armor that it needs to then go back into our review system and say, hey, this is where we got to go. So that's really what this is focused on. We're aiming to try and do maybe at least two conferences like this during our next 5 years. I don't know, you know, for certainly we're working on the first one. You know, it just, these things are very mammoth things. We'll see how it progresses. We would like to have some, you know, transitions. Hey, if we could do three, we'll support three. But I think the question is, we got to get to the first one. The other aspect of the, you know, the program manager training, and I think for probably a member in the room, you're probably just saying, you know, my God, you're way behind the eight ball. We should have been doing this 15 years ago. I think we've been supportive, but we haven't done enough. And that, you know, that was a clear messaging that came out of that that planning. And I hope that, you know, the concerted effort. And it's not just providing a resource to help the new, you know, coordinators and managers coming in, but to create the same pathway and this growth and this leadership and to have that sort of an equal anchoring weight that runs it. Because after all, that is really much the backbone. And I've already sort of, I think, mentioned off enough about the platform, so we won't go back through that. Just briefly, and this is just my housekeeping, but we will be replacing the current, now what's called NOFOs. I have to get, you know, adjusted to, you know, NIH's continual, you know, word salad soup of acronyms. But, notice of funding announcement, you know, it's what we used to call it, just regular program announcement. But this is the bread and butter. This is the one that all our projects that come in through grants will be submitted. You know, we've already got it written. We just have to going through the publishing lines. And so that will hopefully be, you know, open. It's going to look very much like the current one, probably with just some minor upgrades and stuff like that. And then for those that are, you know, very closely following the territory of endovascular therapy and what we're doing with the platform, I think we've already talked about this in the steering. You know, we went to council and we got their strong endorsement to move forward with the program. We're working on getting that funding out. Our aim is to have this program awarded this calendar year. We're in a new fiscal year now, as you know, and I say knock on wood because bunch of people have to do their job first before we can do ours. But, you know, I think that aspect is we hold on that timeline to keep that continuity. The next phase of this will be opening up for the, you know, the domain clinical trial projects. And so you'll see those come out as research opportunity announcements. Those are forthcoming. They're going to be very different. And we will talk about this more as they come online. So I'm not going to spend the time here. I just wanted to put this on the radar screen. It's very different. It's not things that are published in the guide like our normal announcements, but that's just to stay tuned. And I will end with there. The thank you is not for my talk, but the thank you is for all the work that everybody is doing here. And quite honestly, making what we do at NINDS very enjoyable and wanting us to see the success move forward. So with that, I will end.
Can you hear me?
Great. Okay. I think that was such important content, and I just want to pause for a moment for people who might want to come to the mic with any questions or comments. And while they're thinking if they'd like to do that, I just want to send the thank you right back, particularly to Scott Janis, who is, I mean, I know his, I don't know if you can feel it, but his support just goes so far, and it's more than a job for him. It's a passion, and we are so lucky to have him at the helm helping us succeed.
I appreciate that. And I will just say it's on my behalf. It's because of the team that I work with. I have a lot of support with my colleagues, and so I don't get all the credit for this.
So any questions or comments? Don't feel like you have to, but please do come to the mic if you do. I think there was some really important content in there, and I don't want anyone lingering with questions. Yes, and please introduce yourself. Thanks.
Hello, good morning, everyone. My name is Varsha Singh. I'm from St. Joseph's University Medical Center, New Jersey. And Dr. Khatri, so nice to see you, because I have received so many emails, and Lauren Benkin too. comment number one, I'm so excited that there is an education and training program that will be starting under the leadership of Dr. Marshall. My one comment about, I am a stroke program manager, and every patient that comes within the hospital system from emergency room, and when they go out of the hospital, and when they are seen in follow-ups, which means as a stroke program manager, we have pulse on each and every stroke patient. And I just have a humble suggestion that if we are looking at a really overall grasp on our recruitment and the patients, and that we do not miss any patient, I know neurologists do keep a really great contribution, but including a stroke coordinator or a stroke program manager in that research team, if you can, that person should be included as a research team, will really strengthen the research program, that each and every patient is accounted for, and maybe this patient can be included or not, because this stroke coordinator team, they know really in depth everything about these patients. That's all. Thank you.
Yeah, and we very much appreciate those comments, and we didn't get a whole lot into the weeds. I think the network has done several things on that front. You know, we certainly have brought the program managers onto the executive committee, so we have framing and how that's going to guide the thinking that we try and implement in this training. I think you also know that we now have patient advocates that have formed a core and are actively engaging in our working groups, and have been just, you know, phenomenally interesting conversations, because it just brings pause and perspective to the way we're thinking about things. And that's, you know, what it's about, and, you know, how we integrate these components. And Pooja might want to add to that as well, but I appreciate your comments.
Yeah, I really think you hit the nail on the head of some important things that I think we're improving and upgrading on. Laura, did you want to add anything?
In March, we had one of our quarterly RCC manager meetings, and the sister team requested the feedback from some of the RCC managers, and they made some very helpful suggestions to the protocol prior to it going to the IRB. So we in the future, we do want to do that more frequently, just to have a voice.
Yeah, it's really only going to become more and more routine. And so thank you for that comment, because it's helpful to hear how much you're valuing that too. We are running a little behind, and I don't want you to feel like you're not going to get lunch or you're not going to catch your flight. We do have some makeup time, so I'm not worrying about it too much as long as we have good content. But we will, I think it's probably a good time, if there aren't any other questions or comments, to move on to recipes for success of RCCs, and ask the panel to come up to the stage, and we'll clear up some space for you up here.